it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It's Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster. We're with you another hour here on the program. Glad to be with you. It's a big hour. We've got PJ Glasser, our betting insider, coming up. We've got Tim Fitzgerald, our K-State insider, coming up. It's all What's on Tap, brought to you by the Wichita Brewing Company, featuring Yumkin Pumpkin Ale, WBC's most popular seasonal beer that's made with actual pumpkin and served with a spice rim. Yumkin Pumpkin, now available at Wichita Brewing Company. Pizza and beer made here. Welcome back in, everybody. Tommy, before we get to our guest, the two big news items of the day are, they are that Dylan Edwards is going to potentially miss some time, and they are that Rashee Rice is going to possibly miss some time. Two kind of buzzkill-y stories. Let's get real quick, and we'll get more into this with Fitz. Dylan Edwards. So Pete Thamel, and we told you this yesterday, reporting those first couple of, he's not going to play this week, then maybe not against Army. I think what gets really curious is, what do they do with Arizona then? Do they just wait until, because then they get a bye week. Do they just wait for the conference season at this point? I'm fearful that it's a very significant injury. I'm hopeful that they're just playing safe, and maybe Fitz knows a little bit more, but it's a little worrisome to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think the critical thing is to make sure that he's back to be able to play the conference games, because that's really the only path for the Wildcats. They've got to get to the Big 12 title game with that loss in Ireland last week. They're behind the eight ball a little bit. Their backs are up against a wall. They've got to be able to get enough conference wins to be able to make their way to the Big 12 title game. And so I totally understand shutting him down for this game this weekend, because really it doesn't matter. And then honestly, the Army game doesn't particularly matter either. And so I would shut him down for that. Arizona, correct me if I'm wrong, that doesn't count as a conference game this year, right? So that game doesn't even really particularly matter. So I wouldn't be surprised at all, and it wouldn't upset me one bit if Chris Klieman is like, look, we're going to shut him down until Big 12 play. I don't expect him in the game this weekend, don't expect him in the Army game, and don't expect him against Arizona. We've got to have him back and ready to go.
That,
well, I know he's not going to say that, but it wouldn't upset me if he did, because those games are insignificant compared to once you get to the conference opener and all of that, because you have to win as many conference games as you can. That's the only path for the Wildcats to get to the Big 12 title game.
You can't, as a coach and a coaching staff, you can't think that that's the only path. Like, we can think that because we know what kind of gauntlet
it's going to
be.
I mean, it is the only path. You may not want to think it, but it is the only path.
Not if you're the coaches. If you're the coaches, you expect to win every game you play. I think for sure these two make sense, because they should be able to win these games without Dylan Edwards. Arizona becomes the interesting one because it's a road game, and even though it's not a conference game, when you think about, being a top eight team, right? We had eight. How many playoff teams are we at? Eight. When you're thinking about being a top eight team, like or 12.
12. We're at 12.
Yeah, we're at 12 teams. When you're thinking about being a top 12 team, like, you only have one loss right now. If you roll through the next two games, Arizona on the road is a good resume win. Like, when the dust settles, like, if you look really good the next couple of weeks and you're feeling good and you think, okay, we might lose one more conference game, two losses is probably getting you into the CFP, right? I think as coaches, you can't, like, if you have two losses, like, if they were to go through the rest of the season, lose one more game and have two losses, they would get in. And maybe if you have two and then lose a Big 12 championship game. So I don't, It is way too early to say the season's over as far as an at-large bid. You can't think of
they're
it that
not, way. They're not getting an at-large bid. We've talked about that at length. Like,
I'm talking about from making a decision with Dylan Edwards. Like, you and I can say that. But the coaches aren't going to think that. They're not going to think, wow, there's no way we're going to get an at-large bid. We lost the first game of the year. Like, they can't. I hope they're not thinking that way. I hope that they think they can go win every game they play. And the reality is, they're not, Tommy, there's not going to be a game on their schedule, probably, where they're more than a 6 or 7 point underdog, if at all, at any point, if Avery Johnson's healthy, right? Like, that's that. So while it's a daunting task to think about doing it over the course of a season, like, they're not going to go play any game in the Big 12 where they're a massive underdog, where you don't think they have a chance to win.
No, my point is that not only do, and this isn't a knock on Kansas State, not only do I think that it's extremely... not only do I think it's extremely unlikely that the Wildcats can get a at-large bid, I think it's extremely unlikely any Big 12 team is going to get an at-large bid. And so, look, I understand if you're a coach, you want to try to, like, feel like you can win every single game and you'll get the respect nationally to get an at-large bid. Let's be realistic and not look at it through rose-colored glasses, especially with the loss against Iowa State. Kansas State's path is to win enough conference games to find their way back in the Big 12 title game. That's it. Like, that's their path. And it sucks that that's the case, but that's the reality of it. Now, I guess there's a scenario where if they go undefeated the rest of the way and they lose in the Big 12 championship, that would be two losses. Maybe they would get an at-large bid at that point. But that's so, I think, off the table and unlikely that that will even happen at this point. Like, I really don't think, like, you drop one more game and then you lose a Big 12 championship game potentially. That's three losses. You're not getting an at-large bid in the conference of the Big 12. That's not going to happen. Their margin of error is so slim right now. At-large or not, their path is to get to a Big 12 title game. That's really the way it is right now.
I agree. But and this is where the real question comes. How hurt is Dylan Edwards, or are they playing it safe for these two games? If they're just playing it safe for these two games because they know they can win him without him, then you play him against Arizona, right? If it's a significant injury, then you have to reevaluate at that point. But what I don't think they need to do is sit here on August 28th and say, let's just hold him out through Arizona, unless it's very serious.
Yeah, and they're not going to make that decision, right? But it wouldn't surprise me if he didn't play in that game. Because here's the thing, like, you just mentioned the fact that going on the road at Arizona is a good resume builder. And while on paper that may be true, it doesn't matter because they're not building a resume for an at-large bid. They're not going to get an at-large bid, in my opinion. And so it really, at the end of the day, it's an inconsequential game because it's not likely to happen that they'll get an at-large bid anyway. So knowing that that's not a conference game this season, I think you need to push all of your chips to the middle of the table for the conference season. And if that means holding Dylan Edwards out for Arizona, then that's what that means. And you know, we have no idea the severity of this injury, the significance of it. We just know that this week he's not playing, and more than likely next week he's not playing. Beyond that, we don't have any idea.
Yeah, and we'll find out. We'll see if Fitz knows the latest on the injury. The other big news yesterday, Rashi Rice, 6 games. So we went through, you know, how it happened, all the process. Now we look at those 6 games, and this is a part of where when we were just making NFL predictions in the last hour, I'm going to right now, for now, give the slight nod to the Ravens or another. This is the first year in a long time I haven't picked the Chiefs, and it's because I think their margin for error, 6 games is significant. 6 games without Royals, 6 games we've already seen Hollywood Brown get hurt. I think that there is at least a decent, if not good, chance they're going to be hurting at the position for some stretch of this 6 games. Where they're going to be dealing with it, they'll have to work through it until we see it. Like, could they, if they only had Xavier Worthy and Hollywood Brown and Juju and Kelsey, was that enough? Yes, that's enough. Of course that's enough. What are the chances though they'll have all those guys for 6 games? And I think that's where, for me, it's like that their margins just early in the year seem really, really slim, and they play some really brutal games. So if they lose 2 or 3 of those, it's going to be tough to get that home field throughout.
I think it becomes a really, really smart decision in retrospect for them to hold out Hollywood Brown in the preseason. Like, you had to make sure that he was protected and healthy to enter this season. And by all accounts, he is. But I think that was a really, really smart thing to do, to keep him on ice because of the history and what happened in the last preseason, and knowing what they're up against in the first six games without Rashee Rice, and potentially, at least for some period of time, maybe without Jalen Royals. And that's the other thing too, is that while Jalen Royals is penciled into the depth chart, we don't know what his effectiveness is going to be. He's a rookie. It's, you know, the same thing that we didn't know about Xavier Worthy a season ago and Rashee Rice 2 years ago. We didn't really have that information at the time. So regardless of his health, he may have not been a large part of the offense right away anyway. So I think that knowing that they've had Rice now, we know that's going to be six games. Royals potentially might be on the shelf for a period of time. Knowing that they were able to keep Hollywood Brown healthy during the preseason, knowing that Xavier Worthy is ascending and good to go, and, you know, an unlocked Travis Kelce may be a really huge thing for them. I'm not sure that the margins are quite as small as you think they are in the first 6 weeks. I think they're less than what they would have been with Rice on the field, but I still think they've got a pretty good margin in those six games.
It they always have,
because remember that personnel that they're going to be entering the season with is the same personnel that they went to the Super Bowl with.
I get it. And then I think to all the regular season games they won by like literal lucky bounces, and I'm real high on that offense when they get to week seven. I just want to see it for a minute. You know, I want to see Hollywood in that expanded role and everything else. I think they're going to be a good offense. It's the defense, honestly, that I worry about more than anything. But anywho, that's the news there. When we come back, we'll see if BJ Glasser thinks that news changes any outlooks or anything with the Chiefs. We'll talk about all the bets. Get you ready for a full weekend of college football. How about that? That's next on Sports Day.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. Time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
And look who it is. It's our pal PJ Glasser, back for the first time in a while. We are ready to just talk some betting. God, it's been way too long. He's the host of Send It In and Inside the Betting Lines on the BetMGM Network. Boy, you just your Ravens are, you know, they're going to win the Super Bowl. You're all the things are going to come true for you here in late August. PJ, how you feeling?
I'm feeling good, guys. I'm looking at you, right? So that's how I know it's football season, which is awesome. We got 17 college games today. We got 5 straight days of football. Week 1's next Thursday in the NFL. So it's awesome. Great time of year and great to have football back.
The big marquee matchup tonight, PJ, is just up the road from us in Kansas City at Arrowhead Stadium, Nebraska, and Cincinnati. Is there anything you like in this big game tonight?
Yeah, you know, this at certain books, guys, the line, depending on where you look, is either Nebraska 6.5 or Nebraska -7. I think if you can grab a Cincinnati at +7, I think that's probably the side tonight. You mentioned it, Tommy, games at Arrowhead, so should be kind of a de facto home game for Nebraska. They're definitely going to travel well to that game. But look, as you guys know, I mean, Nebraska the last decade, it feels like, has just had so much trouble winning one score games. And even though I really like them this year, it's year 3 of Matt Rhule. You look at whenever he's at a program, whether it's been at Temple, whether it's been at Baylor, when it's year 3, that's when his teams really tend to take off. I think the Cornhuskers could have a really good season, but that doesn't mean that tonight's game's not going to be close. Cincinnati's got a pretty good defense. So if you can grab a +7 with the Bearcats tonight, I think that game's coming down to the wire. I like Cincinnati +7.
That one's tonight, Cincinnati +7. I'm taking notes here, PJ, because right now, I don't know how you feel about this. And like all these sites, like I feel like there are some advantages to checking them all because they're all trying to win our business. So there are all these bonus bets and boosters and everything out there early in the season is kind of good money making time in this. The problem is with college football, to me, man, I don't have a clue what these teams are going to be. The NFL, we have a pretty good idea early. In college, like all the transfers and everything else, my goodness. So what are we looking at in this first week? Maybe in these marquee games, and then we'll get some of your favorite bets. But even because that's what people are going to want to bet, that's where a lot of the boosters are going to be. These absolute marquee games, what do you like? And we can start with the early one, Texas at Ohio State, 11 a.m. kick from Columbus.
Yeah, look, guys, I mean, the way that I handicap week 1 in college football really hasn't changed all that much. It's obviously become more difficult with the transfer portal and NIL and all the moving pieces that we get now every offseason. But for me, it's really all about coaching. And because there's no preseason in college football, you're really relying on these coaches to have their teams ready, especially in these marquee games. And if you kind of go back and look through you know, the history of when these coaches have been at these schools and how their teams have performed, usually either the teams play really well to start the season or they don't play well to start the season. You know, Nick Saban, Kirby Smart, always great bets at the beginning of the year. Brian Kelly and LSU, a game that I know we'll get into here in a little bit, he's lost 5 straight season openers. So you have Ryan Day versus Sark in this first matchup. And it feels like the whole world is on Texas in this game, fellas, right? Number 1 team in the country, you're getting plus money. Haven't heard much Ohio State love. And I understand why. Ohio State has to replace both of their coordinators. You got a true freshman, Julian Sayin, coming in at quarterback. It's a revenge game for Texas. And you think about how Texas has been the last couple of years in these early season games, right? Last year, they go to Ann Arbor. They beat up on Michigan. The year before that, going to Tuscaloosa, beat Bama by 2 scores. But also think back to last year and think about Texas, who had a great team again last season. They played Georgia twice, lost both of those games. Then we get to the college football playoff. They need a 4th-and-13 in overtime to beat ASU. And then they play Ohio State and they lose to the Buckeyes. So in their biggest games, Michigan, obviously, at the end of the year, they lose that one. Or excuse me, that was Ohio State. The biggest games of the year for Texas, they really lost just about all those games. Whereas Ohio State, after the loss to Michigan, everybody was counting them out. They turn around and they beat up on Tennessee. And then the following week, you know, they played Oregon, who was undefeated. And nobody liked him in that game, and Ohio State took care of business. So when the Buckeyes are kind of counted out and nobody likes them in a game, that's when they tend to usually play pretty well. They might have the best player in the country in Jeremiah Smith. They might have the 2 best players in the country with Caleb Downs on the other side as safety. I've been going back and forth on this game, but I think now getting Ohio State at close to a pick 'em, I like the Buckeyes -120.
Let's move on to the game in the middle of the afternoon. You mentioned Brian Kelly, his Tigers at LSU on the road, taking on Dabo Swinney and Clemson. Right now, I mean, it's a coin flip. I mean, just over a field goal, I guess, 3.5-point favorites Clemson are. What do you like in this game?
Man, I like LSU, fellas. I told you that Brian Kelly and LSU have lost 5 straight season openers, but that's become such a storyline, and I think it's such a motivation tool now for LSU to use in this game that, look, they have one of the best quarterbacks in the country, Garrett Nussmeier. They have terrific receivers, great running back, offensive line's very good. The defense isn't what we're used to with LSU or maybe what we saw 7, 8, 9 years ago, but I think it's going to be improved from what it's been the last couple of years. And even though this is probably Dabo's best team that he's had in about 5 or 6 years, I still think Cade Klubnik is a touch overrated. He played the game of his career against Texas in the college football playoff, but if you go back and look, any marquee game that Cade Klubnik has played in before that one really hasn't played all that well. So I think everybody's just kind of forgetting about what he looked like before that Texas game, and I don't think he's going to be as great as maybe as people are expecting him to be in that game or this season. And that game reminds me a lot of the Notre Dame A&M game from last season, guys, where A&M was at home to start the season. They were a 3-point favorite. The big storyline going into that game was Notre Dame had 4 new offensive linemen, just like LSU does in this game against a great pass rush for Clemson. But Notre Dame had a veteran quarterback in Riley Leonard. They figured it out. LSU has one in Garrett Nussmeier. I think they figured it out as well. I think LSU goes into Clemson and beats them outright. So I like the Tigers in that one. I like the LSU Tigers in that one.
You mentioned Notre Dame. They start the season again with another marquee matchup at a true road game at Miami, 6 versus 10. A lot of love for Miami this year, but they're home dogs in this one. Does that surprise you, and what do you like?
Not really. No, I do like Notre Dame in the game. I take them on the money line, guys, at minus 135. For me, Notre Dame's one of the best teams in the country. The only question mark I really have is the quarterback position. They're starting a true freshman in CJ Carr. I think they have the best running back in America in Jeremiah Love, experienced receiving core, great offensive line, great defense, great head coach in Marcus Freeman that obviously proved he could win big games last season. And I've just seen Mario Cristobal team in enough games like this to know that they can be competitive, but they usually don't end up winning. Carson Beck comes over as his quarterback, and they had to replace a lot on both sides of the ball. Now they're still extremely talented, and they have 2 great pass rushers. But I think all those moving parts for Miami in a first game like this, and Notre Dame got experience playing in a monster game last year against A&M that I think will help them. I like the Irish on the road, minus 135.
Little reunion of Catholics and convicts in that game on Sunday night. The finale in week 1 in college football, the debut of Bill Belichick in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, TCU comes to town. Now, neither one of these teams are ranked, but it's the finale on Labor Day. And, you know, Belichick starts off his North Carolina career as a home dog. What do you like in that one?
I like the under, fellas. I like under 56.5. It's come down from 58.5. I think anything good to 55, though, is playable. We're all fascinated to see how this is going to play out, right? We have no idea what Belichick's going to look like in the college game. I think the one thing, though, if you were to feel good about something, is that his defense is going to be prepared. They're going to scheme well, and they're going to play well. Offensively, no idea what they're going to look like. Freddie Kitchens, the old Browns head coach, is the OC for Belichick in North Carolina. He just named his quarterback yesterday. So I think the offense is going to be a work in progress, which obviously helps our under. And then I think the defense is going to be solid because, as we know, Belichick's one of the great defensive minds ever in the history of football. So I don't know if the market's quite caught up to that yet. I still think there's some value on 56.5. So I like under in TCU, North Carolina.
All right, let's switch over to the NFL. We get the Rashee Rice news yesterday. PJ, the Chiefs are not the favorite to win the Super Bowl. I put the 2 futures I liked are the Chiefs and the Lions. This changes maybe the Chiefs a little bit. Your Ravens are actually my Super Bowl pick. We just made in the last hour. Where are you on any of those futures? Any betting values? Anything to attack there?
Yeah, I mean, look, Kansas City, it feels like they're definitely getting disrespected for the first time in a long time. I think people are, built into the market a little bit is that maybe the Ravens and the Bills are just due, right? Like at some point, when as good as Josh and Lamar are, like at some point they'll just get by Mahomes and the Chiefs. But maybe they just won't, guys. Maybe they just won't. Kansas City will just continue to win. And because the Chiefs have been to three straight Super Bowls, it's so hard to continue to get back every single year. They continue to get older. I think there's motivation for them after the way that that Super Bowl went against Philadelphia and not even coming close to winning that Super Bowl and getting the three-peat. I think there's motivation for them to have a good regular season, and they know how important getting the one seed is. If I'm choosing between the Ravens and the Bills as kind of those other teams, Jacob, I'd probably lean more so towards Buffalo just because their schedule is so easy, and they get the Ravens and Chiefs at home this year. And we know between those three teams, probably one of them is going to get the one seed. For Buffalo, the fact that you get both of those teams at home obviously plays into their advantage. They're going to be favorites in both of those games. So I like Buffalo between them and Baltimore just because I think the Bills get the one seed this year. And obviously, if the Bills are playing at home, you got to like them a lot better than if they go on the road. I still think Kansas City comes out of the AFC, though. I still like the Chiefs there. The Lions, I definitely have my concerns about. It's not only the fact that they lost both Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn, both their coordinators, but also the other coaches that those guys brought with them, right? So they really have to retool the entire coaching staff. And Goff lost his center. Frank Ragnow is one of the best centers in the league. We know Goff's not a mobile guy. So losing your center, who is the signal caller on the offensive line, I think that's going to be a big deal as well. The Rams were my pick out of the NFC. The Stafford injury and news is definitely making me a little concerned, but I think it's going to be one of those NFC West teams. I think San Francisco could have a big bounce back year, or I think it could be the Rams. Though one of those two teams would be the ones that I would look at probably to be the NFC representative.
It's always interesting, PJ, when you look at win totals that Vegas sets for each team, where they've got, you know, a lot of these teams that are contenders or even teams that they feel like are going to take a step forward. Is there good value on any teams, maybe not even contenders necessarily, but teams that might be taking a step forward that you like the over in their win totals?
Guys, I really like the Raiders this year. And it was at 6.5 for a little bit, but now it's at 7.5. The Raiders finally got a grown-up as their head coach, right? It's no more Jack Del Rio. It's no more Josh McDaniels, Antonio Pierce. They brought in Pete Carroll. And we know Pete Carroll's won a Super Bowl. He did a great job in Seattle. Only one time in his career with the Seahawks did they lose. Did they win fewer than seven games, I should say. Now, obviously, the roster was a lot better in Seattle, and his defense was way better. But offensively, I think you got to like the pieces that they have, right? They get Genty in the draft. Bowers is one of the best young tight ends in football. And we talk all the time, Jared Goff and how great he is indoors. I don't think people realize how great Geno Smith has been indoors. He played 14 career games with Seattle in a dome. And he had 30 touchdowns and 5 interceptions in those games. He had a passer rating of like 111. The Raiders also went 0-6 last year in divisional games. Even though the AFC West, as we know, is going to be a really good division, I think they're going to win at least two probably divisional games. So I think that'll help them. But I just think the upgrade in head coach, quarterback, you have a great running back, a great tight end. The defense is obviously the big question mark. Max Crosby's really the only piece that you look at on that side of the ball and be like, that's a guy that you could win with. If the defense can get better, and they were really hurt by injury last year, guys, outside of the Lions, the Raiders were the team that was affected most by injury on defense. I think the Raiders could potentially be a dark horse playoff team in the AFC, but I definitely like their win total over 7.5.
What do you think about the Cowboys? Always in the news, PJ. Dak Prescott doesn't ever not win 8 games, like in his career. I believe they're still at 7.5. That to me seems like a screaming value because there's such a long track record of when Dak plays, they win 10 games or they win 8 games or more.
Totally agree with you. Like Dallas is over as well. Because, Jacob, look, I mean, the perception with Dak and Dallas is the playoffs, right? People will kind of forget about how good they are in the regular season, that whenever it comes up about Dak, it's, oh, he's the highest paid player in the NFL and he can't win in the playoffs. Well, for the win total, I don't care about the playoffs. Can he get me 8 or 9 wins, right, in the regular season? That's all I care about. They got George Pickens to help out CeeDee Lamb. obviously they got to get Micah Parsons out there, and I think they will. I mean, Jerry has a track record of kind of doing deals late, right before the season starts. So I think Micah's going to get signed. I think that's going to be fine. But Dallas has good players at all the important positions. You know, they got an above average quarterback. They got two good receivers. They got good linemen. And they got one of the elite pass rushers in the league as well. Schottenheimer is obviously the big X factor. We have no idea what to expect out of him as head coach. But I'm with you, man. I think people forget how good Dak is as a regular season quarterback. I'm not betting Dallas to go to the Super Bowl, win the NFC, anything like that. A regular season, yeah, I'll back Dak. I'll take the over.
All right. PJ, we appreciate it. Anything else in the last 30 seconds we have with you tonight that is a must bet?
Yeah, I like USF tonight, guys. I think that's the game of the night is Boise and USF. Obviously, Boise without Genty, what are they going to look like? I think that first game flying across the country against a very good group of five team, I think they're on upset alert tonight. So I take some USF plus the points. I'd look at some money line as well. USF's good. They got a really good quarterback in Byron Brown. I think the Bulls pull off the upset.
There it is. That's what we're talking about for your Thursday night action. PJ, so glad to have you back on board this year. We will talk again next week, and we'll be previewing NFL games, and I cannot wait.
Can't wait, guys. Good to see you. Talk again next week.
There goes PJ Glasser.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
It is Tim Fitzgerald now joining us, fresh from the homeland. Fitz, it's not the ending we wanted out of the trip to Ireland, but I imagine it was still a pretty great experience to be there.
Oh, it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. I haven't talked to anyone who regrets going despite the outcome of the game, and I'd like to point out that it's currently like 66, overcast and very humid. We brought home the weather, man. This is exactly how it is almost every morning in Ireland year round.
I love it. I think, you know, simply put, as we're coming off of that game, my main question, and I think everybody's question, is where do the Wildcats go from here?
Yeah, you just have to, you know, kind of restart. And you know, people ask me why, and I ask Chris Kleiman this, didn't you take an open week coming back from Ireland and, you know, let your team recoup a little bit? And he said the coaches he spoke with that have been in this game, particularly if you lose, but both win or lose, you want to get back at it. You don't want to have that gap. If you win, you want to keep going. If you lose, you don't want that to stick around. So this was part of his plan, and we'll see if it works out. They did alter their schedule slightly to help the players adjust with their jet lag or possible jet lag, and we'll see if they look sharp on Saturday night.
Fitz, the news right now outside of the loss, and we'll get into, you know, the takeaways from that game, but the, you know, the news at hand is Dylan Edwards.
Yeah.
He's never able to return. Pete Thamel reporting yesterday that it's doubtful, or that he's out and then doubtful. What is your reporting on it? What is your take on the Edwards injury, and how do you see this thing going?
There's a moment during the melee to get the ball. He's being tackled and the ball's bouncing away. The tackler's leg appears to bend his ankle backwards, like hyperextending it by pulling it downward. It's real quick, but they think that's when it happened. And I've never had that injury. I've sprained plenty of ankles, but I've never done that. And I would imagine it makes it very difficult to push off, which is kind of important for a guy of his speed. But they're going to make sure he gets healed up. They need him for conference play. So they hope to have him for Arizona, which is non-conference game, but a conference opponent. And certainly I think if he can't go then, he'll have a week off and be ready for the remainder of the Big 12 slate. They've got to have him out there.
You know, it's interesting to me because we know how sloppy the play was between both teams with different mistakes and fumbles and all of that throughout the course of the ball game. And some of that you can chalk it up to the weather and the conditions and all of that. But really, when you also look at penalties and mistakes in that regard, Kansas State had a lot of them. Iowa State really had none. I think they had one penalty in the entire game. What was your takeaway on the way that those two teams executed from a discipline perspective? It seemed like Matt Campbell had his guys playing pretty clean football.
Yeah, very efficient in the terms of they converted all three fourth down attempts, which really was the difference in the game. And you mentioned, I think K-State had six penalties. Iowa State had one, and it was a kickoff infraction, which came from probably slipping, trying to plant your foot on the muddy, loose turf. So, that little things in a close game, little things make all the difference in the world. It looked like turnovers were going to break Kansas State, but Iowa State gave it right back. So, again, K-State's got to come back and start playing cleaner football and maybe with a little more fire. I thought they were kind of mechanical at times during this game.
Yeah, but the weather, like, it felt like in the second half things opened up a little bit. I know the fourth down conversions didn't go their way. I just am trying to figure out no Dylan Edwards, because we're going to see that probably the next couple of weeks. Like, what is the offense? Is it more pass heavy? Is it more, is Avery going to start to pick up some more carries in that? Because so much of the explosion of this offense, I think we felt like was going to come from him. So if he's not there, what does that look like now?
We'll find out. I mean, it was kind of mundane in Dublin, but then again, they prepared their entire game plan off on the offensive side of the ball for Dylan Edwards, and there's really no one to replicate those plays. He's such a unique talent in some of the things he can do. So a lot of what they prepared went out the window, and they had to call plays on the fly. And we'll see how they attack it this week. They'll have better time to prepare some of their young running backs. They've got a group of freshmen, a couple redshirt freshmen that they really like, and we'll see if they see plenty of playing time in this contest, because you just don't know. Dylan Edwards' injury might be something that gets re-aggravated, so you better plan ahead to be playing without him.
Let's talk about a positive, though, Fitz. One of the big takeaways, I thought the defensive front looked phenomenal in that game. Of course, led the way by Tomi Osunami. I thought he looked really great with two sacks, and there were other guys that were able to get into the backfield as well. Do you feel like that's something that can be carried on and continue throughout the entire season?
I asked Chris Kleiman on Monday if this was the four-man front was a move to address Iowa State, or is this a seasonal change? And he said they're doing it the whole season. They'll still use a three-man front on occasion, but they felt like their defense functions a lot better going back to the four-man front, a traditional 4-3-4. And that's just kind of tracking the movement of the Big 12. It went from a little more wide-open passing and a lot of speed football to power running games that the three-man front wasn't handling very well. So now they've swung back around, as college football will do, and as to address the changing styles. And I liked what I saw. It certainly helps them a lot on pass downs, getting after the quarterback. And K-State's pressure was really good in that first half.
Fitz, what do we know, if anything, about North Dakota? I think I get a little nervous anytime I see a directional Dakota or a Montana involved, that they probably are going to not be bad teams. What are they? The something Hawks, like the Battle Hawks, or
they're fighting Hawks, man. Hawks, wear gloves and fight quite often. Look. They're probably the weakest of the Dakota schools this year. Well, they are, but that doesn't say much. They're picked for the middle of the Missouri Valley. They have a new coach. Being picked for the middle of the Valley in football is like being picked for the middle of the SEC. I mean, it's clearly the best conference in the FCS level. They always have teams hovering around the championship, if not two of them playing for it. In fact, the Valley is more dominant than the SEC is at this level. So, this is a pretty good team. They got some talent. They've been retooled by their new coach, so there's going to be some things that are going to be hard to figure out what they're going to do. But I think this is a game where K-State needs to worry about K-State the most. And just go out there and attack what you see on the field and try to solve some of these problems. Because if they're going to be this sloppy and uninspired and not pay attention to details, this team's going to get in big trouble real fast. So I hate to say it this way, but Kansas State kind of needs to come out and take the fight to the Hawks and just really have a blowout, or at least one that feels that pure domination. They probably need that for their confidence.
once things finally kind of started to open up in that game against Iowa State in the second half offensively for the Wildcats, we saw the passing game for Avery Johnson have a lot more success. And we saw, you know, the wide receivers have success as well, obviously. How did you feel about the way that, you know, like Jerron Tibbs and Jerron Bradley and all, how do you feel like they performed in that game? And do you think that, again, that's something that can carry on?
Yeah. I mean, Avery Johnson completed 70% of his passes, playing half a football in the rain. And when the ball was extremely slippery and the surface was slippery. So there were some drops and a few overthrows, but for the most part, he was on the money, particularly throwing it downfield. Every deep ball he threw was on the mark. One was well defended, a pass to Jace Brown. And, you know, he got it down the field. That Jerron Bradley, you know, touchdown was really impressive. He put it way out there. I think the defense didn't think Avery was going to get it that deep. And, of course, the beautiful double move by Jace down the middle of the field that broke him open, and Avery just laid it in there. So I saw some really positive things from Avery in the passing game, not so much in the running game, and that gives him something to work on.
It gives him something to work on. They don't have a ton of time. If Tim Fitzgerald had to make the call right now, do we see Dylan Edwards at Arizona in a few weeks?
I'm going to guess no. And granted, they did not mention that, but there might be remember, he had a kick return or punt return against Arizona last year, so it might be to make sure Arizona's preparing for him, even if he's not playing, spending some time in practice, because you better believe they're aware of what Dylan Edwards can do.
And then the follow to that, if not, do we see him September 27th in the first Big 12, well, in the next Big 12 game, I should say, against UCF?
I've made that mistake, too. Yes, I do. I think, Chris, remember, there's an off week in there. So there's going to be some healing up. It's a well-placed off week after four games and, you know, two against conference opponents, even if one is a non-con game. So Kansas State's going to need that. And because of playing in Ireland in week zero, they get an extra off week. And I think that'll come to very good use when it gets into the heart of the season and you need to do some healing up.
If we're being honest, any regret to starting the season that way overseas against a team like Iowa State?
No, I don't sense any from the administration or the program. In fact, they discussed to do it again. The outcome wasn't what they wanted, but the experience was. And okay. You know, as Chris Kleiman said, I took a bunch of, you know, young men over there to Ireland, and a lot of them will never have another experience to leave the country to go to Europe. And he wants to do it in the future, but not too soon, because it's a lot of work. It's a lot of stress on the program. But I think everyone who went, including the team, does not regret a thing other than the loss.
All right, Fitz, what do you guys have going for us at Go Powercat?
We got so much cooking. I mean, we've rolled out a whole bunch of new VIP coverage this year, and we 24/7 just flipped us to 75% off overnight. And so, if you're not a subscriber to Go Powercat, it's the time. Our coverage has gone to a new level. We're doing a whole bunch of new stuff. It really digs in deep on this team. 75% off right now for an annual subscription at GoPowerCat.
There you go. State fans, get after it. Tim Fitzgerald, publisher of GoPowerCat.com. Glad to have you back stateside, Fitz. Glad you didn't decide, you know what, I'm going to stay there with my people. Welcome home.
Hey, it's good to be home.
There he is, Tim Fitzgerald. Fitz, we'll talk again next week. Oh, Tommy. You ready to pick K-State minus 27? And what did you tell me yesterday KU is at? Because I'm not seeing them listed. Like 45?
46 and a half is what the Kansas game is. I'm less excited to pick that game. I wouldn't mind. I mean, I think out of the two, I'd rather pick K-State than picking Kansas at 46 and a half.
K-State's playing a much better opponent, though. I don't know, man. Like, there's going to be – you watch. There's going to be a narrative starting. Like, K-State's opening the season – against much better opponents than KU. KU's going to steamroll Wagner, and we're going to start to, you know, KU fans are going to start chirping a little bit. It's all about who you play early, man. K-State, when we look back at this schedule, and I hadn't paid a lot of attention to it, it's a tough schedule. I don't know how good Army is this year, but it's not like your typical cakewalk type schedule at all. They're about to go play at Arizona. Like, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. But honestly, I'm kind of glad for it. It will make K-State better. And I kind of think KU playing these games is going to make them better too. Like, get a couple of get a couple feel-good games out there early, I think that creates the momentum they need. So I think it's going to end up being good for both teams.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make picking the games any easier for sure. Which we'll, on, you know, we'll 46 do that.
And a half.
We'll do that tomorrow with the big slate of college games for sure. But I mean, yeah, this is the part of the season that both teams are getting into where, you know, they're lower opponents, and you've got to handle business. You've got to get yourself right because it's going to be a brutal gauntlet once you get into conference play.
I'm ready for some chirping. As somebody with no skin in that game that appreciates and really loves both schools, I'm ready for some chirping. Let's hear some noise here, KU and K-State fans. Get a little back and forth going. All right, that does it. Jam-packed Thursday. That was a lot of fun today. It feels good. Feels like football season. The Royals get a win. We got breaking news in there. We've made our predictions. Tomorrow we will come back and we will predict the football weekend. We've got to make some picks. We're going to have outrageous spreads on the KU and K-State games, and then we'll probably pick some of the headliners as there are three top 10 matchups on the Saturday slate. Looking forward to all of it. For Tommy Caster, thanks to PJ Glasser for joining us to talk betting. Thanks to Tim Fitzgerald for joining us to talk K-State. For Max Power, we'll see you tomorrow.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly outside of Cleveland, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.